Welcome back to Tip TV Finance. I'm joined in the studio by two heavyweights of the financial world.
Yeah, but you're
the heavier one is possibly...
You're not talking metaphorically
Charlie,
now,
Charlie Gibson, head of mining for Edison Research, who is my co-host. And the svelte one is Mark Oswald, strategist for ADM Investor Services International. How are you today, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you.
Have you recovered from the shock of Super Wednesday?
Of Super Wednesday, indeed. All these wonderful central bank meetings, which were our event risk for the week, which we managed to circumnavigate and ignore thereafter. I think the simple message from the Bank of Japan is that orgy of tweaking really highlighted just how exhausted their monetary policy cupboard is.
I thought you were going to say something else after orgy there, but don't worry, there's a sense of
going back to the heavyweight bit.
And as for the Fed, well, Ms. Yellen really managed to sort of contradict herself all over the place and waffle quite a lot. It seems to me that if you actually look at the composition of the central committee, given that we had three dissents, the three dissents that we had were all from the regional Fed presidents, is there's a degree of political influence there. And when you actually look at it, Janet Yellen used to be a presidential advisor. Lael Brainard is being touted as the next Treasury Secretary. Mr. Turullo is also ex-government. So was it any really big surprise that 6 weeks before an election, the Fed isn't going to hike rates?
Can I ask you a question? Because I was talking to a US fund manager earlier this week, and he said something that a lot of people don't know about the Fed, and I would regard him as an impeccable source, but I wondered if you'd heard this or anything similar. He said the majority of members who vote at the Fed are lawyers. That's their background training.
Well, it's not necessarily the background training. The background training is relevant. There are a number of people on the central board of the Fed who are there as experts, for instance, in community banking, in housing. They're not really monetary policy experts. Therefore, they tend always to follow whoever's in charge, i.e. the chair and the vice chair, i.e. Ms. Yellen and Mr. Fisher, pretty much sheepishly, because they don't have an enormous opinion on the situation. So that always gives it an asymmetric bias in any case.
Yes.
You know, depending on which way you're looking, but at the moment it always seems to be easing. I think the message from Yellen was pretty simple. We dangle this sort of rate hike in December again, but really the language of it was again, we think that... interestingly, of course, she did make that interjection in the middle of a press conference that don't ask me for forecasts because they'll probably be wrong, some of them very wrong, which I thought was hilarious. But she then went on
to... Let the cat out of the bag there. Destroy the career of, like, you know, everybody with an economics degree.
She really needs to take a lesson from Mr. Carney, who will basically always say he's right, as we know. But they're basically saying we're still very data sensitive, which basically says to the market, well, if you see any bits of weak data, you can start pushing back on that 60% chance. So we're left there. And then we're left first of all, for financial markets, look staring down the barrel of quarter end. So having had defensive positions in the market, you know, ahead of this so-called event risk, and with markets having been a little bit more volatile, I say a little bit more volatile, beforehand, you suddenly get this rally that we saw yesterday in every asset class, bonds, credit, commodities, equities, largely because if you are going to be defensive, you'll go to cash. But unfortunately, the cost of holding cash these days is absolutely enormous. So with quarter end staring you in the face, you just basically go, buy everything, which is hilarious, but it can be easily spooked, as we found out today. Because a lot of the rally that we've had sort of after the debacle at the beginning of the year has been predicated, one, on oil prices recovering, and oil prices have gone back today, and two, us being less worried about the banking sector. But, of course, we've got another Deutsche Bank story coming out today, talk of it might be as much as 55% of GDP for Germany to bail out Deutsche Bank, and suddenly the rally stops.
The Yellen issue, or that the central bank issue. Well, it's the Fed issue, really. It's nothing. The interest rate hike is nothing to do with economic data.
No.
That's one thing. ultra-low interest rates lead to deflation? That's another point.
Yes, they're certainly deflationary, yeah.
And then we have the whole issue of basic policies is geared around maintaining the stock market at a high level, which is politically...
I don't think it's even that. I think the whole issue boils down to we can't allow the systemic risks, which are still very much in the banking system, to crystallise again. And that is the key issue.
And the other issue...
They have no confidence that anything that they've done since 2008 has done anything to solve those problems.
And the other giveaway for the Bank of Japan was because they're fiddling the yield curve now because there's nothing else left to do. That shows that the whole policy... of QE is purely for one sector, for the banks, to maintain the banks, and it would have been cheaper to literally buy shares in the banks or just give the banks a big check rather than to do all this interest rate manipulation and take us through all around the houses.
Alternatively, they could have let the banks go and bought them all for a quid.
There is one other aspect to the Bank of Japan's thing, because if you lock the yield curve the way that they have, if you want to express a view, which you might previously have done via the Japanese interest rate curve, you're now going to have to do it via the currency. So if we lose faith in the Bank of Japan, if we lose faith, then we can drive the yen down. And that's actually probably something that the Bank of Japan wants to achieve, because it's got the yield curve all locked up, except at the long end, and, well, they've threatened to intervene there. I think the interesting thing is the way that people are reading from the Bank of Japan to the ECB, and then the comments that we've had from the ECB as part of the European Systemic Risk Board meeting conference that they've got at the moment, which are all leaning very heavily against the market, telling the ECB you need to do more. We've had Mr. Villeroy this morning basically saying we're at the trough for interest rates, basically. He's then came out with this interesting sentence, given people still look at the ECB as having a massive easing bias. He said... how fast we raise interest rates will depend on how fast inflation rises. Well, that's an interesting turnaround. Yeah. And then we had the vice president of the ECB, Mr. Constancio, basically saying, you can't lean on monetary policy anymore. It's going to create, if we keep rates too low for too long, it's going to create a lot of financial stability risks. So the ECB effectively here is going... Now, wait a minute. If you think there's a read-through from the Bank of Japan to us, you are wrong. Apart from anything else, there's this small technical point. If the ECB were going to lock the 10-year rate, which one would it lock and how would it go down politically? Are we saying we lock the 10-year Bund yield? How well would that go down in France or Italy? Do we lock the French 10-year yield?
How well does that go down in Berlin?
Exactly. So it's not a situation which... You know, if I know there's a lot of chatter about it, but if you actually look at it, it's not something which the ECB can do because it's a different type of central bank.
Mark Oswald, strategist at ADM Investor Services International, thank you for coming in today.
Pleasure.
We'll be back after the break.